Welcome to the Two Vets Talk Pets podcast, hosted by veterinarians Dr. Lewis Kirkham and Dr. Robbie Anderton, who'll give you the inside scoop on the secret lives of your pets and have a light-hearted look at the latest animal news, health tips, and other random facts. All names of people and pets have been changed for confidentiality, so if a story sounds familiar, don't flatter yourself. Every owner is just as animal crazy as you are. So sit down, place your furry, feathered or scaly best friend on your lap, and it's over to Lewis and Robbie.
Hello and welcome, listeners. Long-time listeners, new listeners, listeners that thought that we'd fallen off the face of the earth, listeners that didn't even remember that they'd actually subscribed to this podcast. Welcome back to Two Vets Talk Pets podcast, where too much talking of pets is barely enough. Episode 203. I'm Dr. Robbie Anderton, and I'm joined by a man who has been marked in his absence by running around and trying to single-handedly pick off every flea in the greater metropolitan Melbourne area with his bare hands. It's Dr. Lewis Kirkham. Lewis, how are you going?
I'm good, Robbie, except in Toorak, because there are no fleas in Toorak.
No fleas in Toorak, no. No, you're absolutely right.
Which I learned very quickly when I worked there for a long period. Toorak, for those listeners who are not Melbourneites, Toorak would be one of the more...
It is where all the rich people live. All the people who are in the 1% of the 1% of the 1%, they all live in Toorak, and none of their animals have fleas.
Yeah, exactly. A bit like probably Manhattan in New York. I don't know, in America.
Maybe Bennelong in Sydney.
Double Bay.
Oh, okay.
Is
nice.
That a good one? I don't know. I wouldn't have a clue.
I remember one of our most early interactions when a client of yours, I don't know, maybe they defaulted on their loan and they had to move from Toorak out to Mount Waverley. And they were coming and seeing me for because their dog needed an enema and it needed regular enemas. And so usually we see Dr. Lewis Kirkham. I go, oh, yeah, Dr. Lewis. I know I'm Dr. Lewis. He's written a book and everything. This was before we were doing the podcast.
Yes,
and I think I'd sent you an email saying, hey, Lewis, name's Robbie. Know you through Willow. Saw you at a conference a couple of years ago. Just letting you know, I've seen this dog in for an enema, you know, and he's gone. I think you said something along the lines of, oh, yeah, did you use champagne? That's all we use for enemas here in Toorak.
Only the best.
gave me a little glimpse into what the podcast was going to be like when we started recording.
Some of that champagne with those little gold flecks in there, mate. That's all we ever use in the Toorak, definitely.
It's the only way you can clear that poo right out from that transverse colon, mate. Without those gold flecks, it's not coming out. What have you been up to, champ, apart from giving enemas?
Yeah, well, it's been a red hot couple of months, and there's been a fair bit going on, so much so that I haven't got a lot to talk about, but I do have a story.
Oh, hit
actually
me.
That I'm going to try and keep it anonymous, yeah,
good.
as I want, but often when we're chatting I do say names, so hopefully I won't get there. But I saw had a little bit of a difficult consult, I suppose. Regular GP consult, 15 minutes, interesting start to it. We're busy. If there's something behavior related, generally I try and sort of pick them out, or the other vets will pick them out, or if there's something that the other vet prefers or wants to see someone else, as probably you do, you try and, yep, this vet can do this one. And then I saw this behavior one that had seen sort of Carl previously, and there was a comment that, you know, hadn't reacted so well to the medications that Carl had used. And so I thought, I flagged that I'll try and see that dog. And then unfortunately, it's got busy. Carl was in there. So I've walked in halfway through, gone, did you want me to, you know, awkward situation, because I'm happy to behave, take over, sort of thing. Anyway, so I ended up taking over. And
just white-handed him right out of there.
That awkward moment where you're like, I know Carl, like, he can do behavior consults. That's fine. But I also know that perhaps it's not his most enjoyable thing. Forte, you know, like maybe if there's a dog spay that comes in, that's not my preference. So if Carl came and said, hey, Lewis, do you want me to do that dog spay? I'll be like, do I want?
Go for it.
Yes. It's all yours. And so we sort of work, you know, it's collegiate.
Exactly.
And so anyway, so turned out the owner was did turn into a full behavior consult. So 15 minutes ended up being an hour, but essentially she had I won't go into the ins and outs of the consult, but she had a deaf dog, and and some issues with the deaf dog. And sort of when I'm chatting about it, I sort of realize that the dog has got a collar on, a special collar with a little electronic box on it. And I sort of chatting away and it came up. She said, oh, this is a vibration collar. Now, for the uninitiated out there, you know, you can get a collar that is purely a vibration collar.
Right.
Now, that's different from a collar that often may be labeled as a vibration collar, but is a shock collar or an e-collar, not an Elizabethan collar, but an e-collar, yep, or an electric collar or electronic collar or a static pulse collar. There's lots of little euphemisms that you use.
Yeah.
For what I call a shock collar, basically it gives an electric shock between two prongs on the collar that is meant as a punishment for the dog. Yeah. Separate to that, you can have a vibration collar that literally just vibrates.
Yeah.
And sometimes comes with a tone as well, but obviously that doesn't work with a deaf dog.
Yeah.
But the vibration part, and essentially you put the vibration collar on the dog when you teach the dog that when the collar vibrates, it learns to look to the owner, who can then give a hand signal from, yep, a distance saying, come, sit, stop, whatever that signal is. So, yeah, essentially all it is to mark to the dog that, hey, like you'd be out in the park going, Rosie!
Yes.
No, sorry, not Rosie. That's all good.
No, anyway. Maybe that's the reason why Sage doesn't turn around to look at us, because we keep calling out Rosie to her.
You probably do occasionally. Get off the couch, yeah. Yeah. But yeah, Sage, come here. You know, yelling at so that's the sort of idea of the vibration collar. So she's taking the collar off and she's gone, oh, you know, I've got this collar sort of thing. And I've sort of looked at the collar. It's got the two big prongs on it, you know, that you've got to complete the circuit between the prongs. And she's got a little handheld remote device with it. And if you imagine, you've got your iPhone, or perhaps some of those unlucky listeners got an Android phone, and you sort of, you divide that down the middle.
Yep.
And on one side, it does have a section that's got buttons all for vibration collars.
Yep.
And a level you can put it on, you know, 1 to 10 of how much it's vibrating. But then on the other side, and what I didn't realize, it's got shock as well.
Right.
So you've got an option of, you know, 1 to 5 shock, obviously. And she didn't buy it for that, but this is the collar she thought was recommended. And interestingly enough, she didn't, when she first got the collar, she didn't use it. First, she waited. She looked online and found an expert trainer to come in, who knew about vibration collars, to come and assist her how to use it on her dog. So waited and got the expert trainer out. And the expert trainer has come in and put the collar on the dog and, you know, sort of, you know, talking about using it, and then dialed it up to 5 and then proceeded to press the shock button for the very first time the poor dog has collar on. And she said, and that didn't go so well. And then the dog refused to move anytime it had the collar on at all.
Yes.
Because the very first time it had it on, it had an absolutely horrible experience.
Negative experience. Yeah.
So it's funny in hindsight, but horrible to think about what, you know, at that time that she's trying to do the best by the dog, and this expert trainer's come in and unfortunately just pressed all the wrong buttons.
Mm.
So I was like, well, that's awkward. So yep. So she just now got to the point where the dog could now wear the collar several months later, and had been doing some good training herself with it. And so she took the collar off the dog and she proceeded, and I was like, oh, you know, I've seen the prongs, and I'm like, oh, right, okay. She goes, I'll show you how it works. It does a really good vibration.
Yeah, hold it in your hand.
Hang on. And really good vibration, and you know, you can have a feel of it. And I'm like, whoa, no, don't. I don't need to know how it works. You know, I don't need to see. I don't know. And you know, I went to when I was doing my memberships in animal behavior, my further degree, in animal behavior, I did go to a conference where similar people are doing those sort of exams came, and we had to bring devices that could help us with our behavior stuff. So people brought a Kong that could be enriched, or maybe an Aussie dog toy, or a Buster food cube, or maybe a halter or a front attach harness to these were things. And there was one person in the class who brought this massive black suitcase.
Right.
And with this is with Kirsty Sexel, who is a well-known behaviorist, you know, positive reinforcement, and as proceed to open the briefcase, a bit like we're on Pulp Fiction.
Yes.
And we're all like, what's in the briefcase?
Yeah.
And she had the full selection of shock collars.
Oh, my
that
God.
That she's proceeded to show and then show how much they didn't hurt when she put them on her own skin. And I was like, I'm not having a go. And I've never actually had Kirsty Sexel go quiet. And just say nothing for a long period of time until someone's eventually said, Kirsty, what are your thoughts? And it was interesting. So I've seen the collars and I've seen certain vets put them on their neck and show on, you know, a current affair and how they don't hurt and all sorts of things. So, but I knew this, you know, I said, don't bring the collar near me. Don't bring the collar near me. So she's got the collar there on the table and she's got one finger on one of the prongs. And she's sort of like, you know, doing the vibration. Yeah, the collar's vibrating and that sort of thing. Got one finger in the prongs. She goes, it doesn't seem to be working so well. Have you ever been in a crowd, Robbie?
Yes.
You're in a crowd situation. Maybe you're walking along and you trip over and you fall over.
Yep.
And you might hurt yourself, but you sort of get up quickly and you're, I'm all right. Everything's
I'm all
fine.
Right. No, yes, yeah. No. Let's keep good going. Save. The close
yeah,
save.
Yeah. 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 You know, I've actually scraped my knee quite badly.
Yeah.
But no, I'm not going to show that I've twisted my ankle and hurt myself. So the owner's holding the shock collar and I was like, I think, and she's going, oh, you know, even the shock doesn't work. You know, it doesn't hurt. I'm like, oh, don't. And she's got one finger on one of the prongs and put the shock component onto one and press the button and go, see, I can't feel anything. I've got, but you know, you do need to put your finger across the two prongs to complete the circuit for it to work. And before I sort of got that out, she's dialed it up to six. She's put both her fingers across the prongs and pressed the shock button and just absolutely collapsed onto the floor.
Oh no. She tasered herself.
I was like, oh my. But you know, when you trip over.
Yeah.
And you don't want to feel like, you know, you've hurt your ankle. Yeah. She was up holding onto the table. I'm fine. All good. Nothing to see.
Barely felt it.
Oh no. I was like, oh my goodness. I was like looking around. Where are the candid cameras?
Where are the cameras?
what kind of, and I had to pretend that I hadn't tried to warn her and that I knew that the shocks hurt.
Yes.
It was just that moment of like, oh my goodness. It was just like a comedy of errors that, of issues that was going on and just where you could see how it was going to play out, but I just couldn't stop her enough to.
Yes.
And then the full collapse down.
So it's like watching a train crash. Yeah, you just know exactly what's going to happen. You see it all in slow motion.
Yes.
And then suddenly, bang, she's nailed.
I couldn't have written a better script for the podcast, really, just as a little anecdote of how the shock collars work. So, but anyway, it was a difficult behavior case. And so the owner's doing some amazing stuff. She's working with a dog trainer over in the US as well. He's really, really good. So I'll chat with her next week and hopefully we can get some help for her. But she was just trying to do everything right, but it just seemed like everything was going wrong. So anyway.
Gee whiz. I had a funny one this week. So I've just gotten back from holiday, and so we don't.
Nice. Especially want to share with the listeners, the Patreon supporters have put their heart and money into the show that we get to occasionally.
Just going supporting a hard done by Pacific Island, mate. You know, doing it hard through COVID. So I actually had a repro case come in, which is uncommon. We don't see that many whelping bitches anymore. You know, most of them we are actually getting a few more. I think now as people are de-sexing their animals later, I think we are just getting the odd accidental pregnancy, and that's what this one was, an accidental pregnancy. Little oodly dog, and we the owner wanted to know how many pups were in a few weeks ago, so we took an x-ray, saw three massive babies inside of this tiny little dog, and I did measurements of the width of the head and the width of the pelvis, the pelvic canal. I said, look, I know things are going to stretch here, but we might be in some trouble. Keep a really, really close eye on it. So we did all the things of keeping an eye on temperatures for temperature drops and things to try and check and give the owner a good idea of when it should come going to labor. And it got down to the days when it was going to be happening, and it was about 4:30, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and ready to leave. And, you know,
Friday afternoon, perchance? Saturday afternoon.
It may have been a Friday. If it wasn't a Friday, it was a Wednesday, but it was definitely a day when then I wasn't on the next day. And I was looking forward to Yabba Dabba doing it out of there.
Yes.
And the owner, the nurses have said, oh, look, we've got this dog coming down, the one that you x-rayed the other day. The owner thinks it's gone into labor. We're not too sure. So, okay, right, bring it down. And they're going, here we go. Messaging Christina saying, right, I'm going to be late. I think I'm going to might have a season I'm going to have to do.
Any chance you could change that flight out that we're taking to that beautiful Pacific Island?
Just delay
that a couple of hours. Just tell them, look, I'll be there.
Just let Uncle Jetstar know that, yeah, if he could just delay it for a little while. So the dog's come in and examined her. She's seeming pretty happy. And so I've done a vaginal exam, so put my sterile glove on, sterile lube, gone in there and had a feel, and I could feel the puppy still up inside of the, it hadn't actually engaged in the pelvic canal yet.
Yes.
And so I tried checking the cervical reflex to see if I could get a contraction. There's nothing happening yet. I said, look, I think she's getting close because I can feel the puppy there, but the puppy's not engaged. So it might be that it's just going to take a little bit of time for this to come through. I don't think we should be jumping in and doing a cesarean right now because she hasn't even really had a contraction herself yet. So I said, are you happy to take me? Yeah. No, look, I just wanted to check and make sure. All right. Well, yeah, look, you're on like Donkey Kong. Don't go, going and watching Titanic or any movie that you're going to be stuck in the cinemas for 3.5 hours because something's going to be happening soon.
We'll go home and call me in 5 hours when it's more close to midnight, and then we'll do something.
Yeah. And then we can do so. When I got back into work, I said to the nurses, has anyone heard what happened with that dog? No, we hadn't heard. I haven't heard anything yet. Okay, right. So I rang up the owner. I said, look, just touching base to see how things are going. There was nothing that came through from the emergency center either. So you make an assumption. All right, well, at least she has to go to the ER. And she said, oh, my God, literally 20 minutes after we got home, she started contracting. And 10 minutes later, the first puppy came out. And then it was like a machine gun. The next two came out, lickety split. And so I think what I must have done is that I must have just sort of, let the light in. And so then the puppy could see the light at the end of the tunnel and thought, oh, that's the way I'm supposed to go.
Here
so
you guys.
Out
here
I go.
You
go. Yeah.
Wow. A fantastic.
Breath of fresh air. And then out they came, Lewis. So, still got my hand in the repro stuff. You just got to put your finger in, just give it a little tap on the head and go, come on, tiger, you're evicted. The tribe has spoken. Get out of there.
Well, excellent. I think sometimes the visit to the vet this little surge of cortisol just slows things down.
Yes.
And then they get back home in their own environment, and then they go back to going again. Sort of the white coat syndrome, mate, maybe. That
absolutely.
Was part of it. So that's fantastic. So three little puppies. Cute.
Three big puppies. They were about half the size of the mum. I think she would have weighed about 2.5 kilos lighter afterwards. But anyway, that's all right. The pups
fantastic,
are out and everything's wonderful.
Mate. So that's a lovely little story. Excellent. All right. And big thank you to our supporter, Zilkeen, supporter of the podcast. Actually, they came in into the clinic a few weeks ago and gave me a couple of bags of some of their Zilkeen medium dog chews, mate, which are meant for you, I think. So I've got them here. If ever you're over this way, you can pick them up for Sage. It must be some anxiety. She worrying about chewing up the
sprinklers. And I said, well, funnily enough, Lewis, you actually, I think then I saw the rep and then she dropped me off a couple of bags. So she must have known that you're a bit of a black hole when it comes to dropping things off there. So, but we got the chews. They are, palatable chews. So rather than the powder sitting in the capsule, we've got the little chews that you can pop in there and the dogs have a little nibble on, and then they get their little whack of alpha cazozepine just to try and help to relax them down when they've got those mild anxiety issues. So if your dog, or I guess, cat, it's probably the same. It's the same thing that's in there. You probably just got to crush it up for a kitty cat. But Zilkeen comes in more ways than just the capsules now.
Excellent. And they have got a new landing page. If you're interested, go to zilkeen.com.au for Australia. And I imagine it's probably .com.br for our Brazil listeners.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Very
or maybe
good.
Just .br or .ai even if you're into ChatGPT as we have been. We didn't do that intro, did we? That was
no, a... no. We might anyway, do that next time. Lewis put a bit of an intro in for told the AI to write us an intro. And to be honest, probably had we actually got the company that then wanted to take our voices and turn them, we could have just got ChatGPT just to do come up with a podcast topic, and then we could have just used the algorithm to come up with all the words, and we could have just kept on not recording it in person like what we've been doing for the last couple of months anyway.
Well, what they wrote was more professional than what we wrote. So that's
how you know it's fake.
Yeah. You know it's fake. Exactly. Because there's no dribble about going to, you know, about our football teams or something else or the games of softball we've been playing or something like that, whatever.
Yeah, stuff. You know, maybe we get them to try and do a bit of an intro for Delicate Care. What do you think it would say if you got them to do an intro for Delicate Care?
Well, Australian made, Australian owned, full of
good stuff.
All the best ingredients that you can buy go into it for their skin and stomach diet, their dental
diet, weight management, arthritis management, and their Cherish brand as well, which is just your I need a dog food from a dog or a cat food from a cat. Where you can get Cherish from your pet shop. So many, many different options, all made with Australian ingredients. Everything that can be made in Australia is made in Australia, in a factory made in Perth, and shipped not only all around Australia, but around the world.
Yeah, exactly. And a great product. So get behind them, guys, and go and get some Cherish or some Delicate Care for your pooch.
And so, speaking of Cherish, Lewis, you know who else I cherish? Our wonderful Patreon subscribers. Thank you very much to the wonderful Patreon subscribers. We know you all by name and we love you. We won't mention names on air directly because we don't want to embarrass you, but you know who you are, and thank you very, very much.
We do know all of one of you on our Patreon supporters. No, we do. Thank you very much, everyone. That you really do support, and it's your I guess it's your continued commitment that helps us to keep pushing to try and find times that match up when we can meet up and have these chats about our footy teams and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And our AI things and, you know,
irrelevant stuff.
All the important stuff that you know you're not going to get from an AI content engine.
Exactly. Spot on. And speaking of that, this is an article that I saw in it's in people.com.
Oh, People magazine. People,
didn't that used to be a bit of a racy magazine?
I think it was often patronage by truck drivers on long haul drives. I think there was some interesting articles and maybe sometimes some photos of models that may or may not have lacked certain amounts of. Or is that the Picture magazine? I'm thinking of Picture. You're talking about People.
I only ever read the articles, mate, so I wouldn't have a clue what you're talking about. So
that's the reason why you need the glasses now, because you're so busy reading the articles.
Right, okay. Wow. You don't get that from ChatGPT. Yes, you don't get that's not your standard ChatGPT answer. All right, this is an article. Extending your hand for the sniff test.
Sorry, what are we doing to
it? It's not the way to introduce yourself to a new dog. Make sure you wash your hands.
Yes.
After you've been reading those articles. Well, he's talking about, I don't know what he's talking about. A popular Facebook post and a dog trainer to the stars are debunking the popular sniff test as the right way to introduce yourself to a new dog. Many learn one way or another that when you meet a new dog, the correct way to introduce yourself is by extending your hand toward the dog's face and letting the pup sniff you.
Yes.
This is true. I mean, we see vets do it. I see vets do it in my clinic. I see everybody do it. In the human culture, extending a hand to someone who just met means a sign of friendship. So naturally, we do it with the dogs when we first meet them. Tamar Geller, a dog trainer with A-list clients like Ben Affleck, Lady Gaga, Reese Witherspoon, and their canines, told People magazine. But this introduction, often called the sniff test, Geller noted, is not the way to go when meeting a new pooch. Many more are starting to realize this thanks to a viral Facebook post from Eureka Dog Services, a dog training company. In a detailed post which went on to get over 67,000 shares.
Wow.
Wow. That's almost as many as podcast listeners we'd get.
Absolutely. Almost. They might be able to catch up with us.
Almost. Ask Renus to use their manners and to stop doing the sniff test when approaching new dogs, because the test is a badly ingrained habit that society has been taught without a clear understanding of what they're actually doing. The post goes on to list the reasons why the sniff test is the wrong approach, including the gesture is not usually matched with permission from the dog's owner to approach the pet, and it's easy for canines to feel cornered and threatened by the body posture, which often involves walking up to a dog and extending a hand towards their face. And this is exactly it. When I meet a dog, at work, so perhaps they're already in the consult room and I come in the consult room, I will just squat down and turn sideways and say hello to the dog. And often, if the dog wants to, it comes up to me, I will then, if it approaches me and sniffs on my leg, I will then go to pat it, perhaps under its chin or on its side. But then what I will do is actually withdraw my hand again and allow the dog to walk away.
Right,
and then see if it wants to come back to me again. Yeah. So often that's how I normally do the interaction. Now, I might at that time, if it walks away and doesn't come back, I'll go, right, I'll ask the owner, do you mind if the dog has some treats? And then I'll, throw some treats. But that's what I do in a consult. And what I will then do is often if I sort of squat down side on, not really looking at the dog, and they don't approach me, I go, do you want to say hello? I'll talk in that sort of tone. Bit different to being out in the park, I suppose, because they're there. Obviously, I do have to approach them at some stage.
Yeah.
But the owners are often like pulling on the leg, going, come on, go and say hello. Come and say hi. And I'll say to the owner, no, it's okay if we don't say hello.
Yeah.
But let them off the lead. Let them walk around the consult room. I'll stand up, start doing my thing and ignore them and start throwing some treats on the ground if I've got permission for the owners to do that. So that's what I think people should be doing if they want to say hello in the park setting. And this article does go into that a little bit. Basically, you should firstly, obviously, ask the owner, can I say hello to your dog is the first thing. And listen to what the owner says to you.
Yes.
If they say no, she doesn't like people, please listen. No, dogs love me. No, I'm really good with dogs. I'm a vet. I'm really good with them. You don't understand. I've owned 40 dogs in my life. Dogs love me.
Love me. All they want to do is pat me. I'm going to pat them. They want to pat me. It's great.
Yeah, exactly. All dogs love me. No, they don't all love you. There are some dogs that don't love people. And if the owner says, no, I would prefer you didn't, then please listen to the owner to do that. And then I'd be squatting down 45 degree angle and seeing if the dog wants to approach me. And if it doesn't want to approach me, that dog has said, I don't want to approach you. And even then, if they approach, you're still looking at their body language. You're still looking, are their ears forward? Is there a nice, happy wag of the tail? Or are their ears back? Is there a tenseness in their brow? Are they not happy to sort of be greeting you? So you do need to really try and monitor their body language. And if they do approach you and they sniff you and perhaps then you might give a pat, but then I'd be withdrawing that and seeing, do they walk away or do they nudge you and go, hey, I like that, Pat.
I like that.
Here's a nudge. More. Give me more. So it really must be important to keep an eye on that. So a really good article. Great, it went viral. But just gives a little shout out as to how we perhaps should change the way we approach saying hello to strange dogs that we want to say hello to.
Gee, I was going to say they're really going to enjoy the extra bump that they're going to that their viral nature of their article is going to have from all our listeners jumping on board and having a listen as well.
Oh, totally, especially when I don't put a link in the show notes because I've got time.
it is good. It is taken for granted that every dog's a dumb Labrador that just likes to and hello to all our Labrador owners out there. Woo. A Labrador that just likes to that just is happy to get any attention and doesn't care how that attention comes. Some dogs it does take a little bit more work to try and get them on your side, and that's certainly something that we see in consults. And I think it's something that you can either do really well or you can do really badly, like in the old days where it was just right, come in, get the muzzle on it, give it the injections, and then that they're just they're going to be worse and worse and worse as time goes on. I think we're a lot better now being able to pick those and say, no, I think there's better ways in which we can try and approach your dog. And it might not be that we can do everything. I won't take its temperature. I'm not going to put my finger up its bum. I'm not going to try and trim its nails. We're going to just try and make this as pleasant a visit as possible. There's nothing personal, you know, but we're going to be needing to do this again in the future. So yeah, we want to try and make it so that we can do it in the future.
Yeah, spot on, mate. Very well said. Yeah. Very so. And apology to our Labrador owners for Robbie kink shaming them there. That was awkward. But
love all the Labradors. Love all the Labradors. You know, I love your Labradors out there, Labrador people. They're all awesome.
Excellent. All right, let's get on that disclaimer so I don't get sued for.
Excellent. Let me see how I go. So I don't have it in front of me. I'm all advice and breed related notions on this podcast. No, I can't remember it. Do you have it there in front of you?
General in nature.
They are general in nature. Yes.
We got ChatGPT to write a disclaimer, and it took up the whole podcast. I think we wouldn't have any time to talk anything else. It was very long.
Is that because it got its legal team to actually look at it and thought, hang on, there's a lot of holes here. It's a bit of a Swiss cheese disclaimer.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, yeah. They're the little man in the hat at the cat show. Yeah. He sees right through that. No worries about it. All advice on this show is general nature, so please consult your veterinarian before following advice for your pet. We do our best to provide the most up-to-date information. But as veterinary medicine and AI medicine is continually advancing and changing, please let us know if we have missed anything. Now, I thought maybe this week we'd just go straight on to a little question that was
good.
That's 2 months overdue from Elizabeth Elizabeth.
Yeah,
but she knows who she is. She's from Texas.
Hey
y'all, y'all. We're so good with accents.
We love Texas in this house because, of course, Mason Cox, from Collingwood. Oh, he's from Texas.
Oh dear, here we go. Here we go. Right,
ChatGPT.
Scratch you later, everyone. That's right. It's not ChatGPT because now we're going on to footy.
Footy,
yeah. There's a one team that's doing quite well at the moment. It's
Richmond? Is that Richmond at the moment? They're doing well? No.
No, it's not. It's your team, Dan.
I told you that that in the pack of footy cards that I got at the start of the season, that I got a Richmond Premiership predictor card, and that if Richmond won the Premiership, I was going to be able to exchange that for 3 ultra rare gold cards. And that card was actually worth about $500 when we first pulled it out of the packet. I'll give you the tip, mate. It's not worth $500 anymore.
Especially now that you microwaved it as well. It's not worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I took that from
like everyone's memberships at Richmond.
Anyway, Elizabeth.
Sorry. Hello from Texas. New listener here. That's right. But I've really enjoyed the show. So can you be is that a surprise if you're a new listener? You don't normally enjoy the show.
Yeah.
And I would like to say thanks for always being entertaining yet educational.
Well, nice.
Thank you, Liz. That's lovely. Quick backstory. We lost our dog of 6.5 years last summer and decided it's time for another puppy. Oh, condolences on the loss of your pet. After researching, we have narrowed it down to a Labrador.
Yeah, perfect. What a great breed.
Very intelligent. Yes. Robbie loves them. They're top. If you're going to choose IQ and a breed, Robbie's got the Labrador
right at the top.
They're that D word.
Yeah, there's a reason why they're used for seeing eye dogs and for sniffing out bombs and all that sort of stuff because they're just good dogs.
Exactly. Now, she says, after researching, we've narrowed it to a golden retriever.
Yep.
Thoughts on IQ, mate? You got anyway. Oh,
golden retrievers are great too. Very hairy, lovely dogs.
Versus a golden doodle.
Oh, right.
So that would be a golden retriever cross
poodle. I would have thought yes,
doodle, but are leaning toward the golden retriever. We would love your input / thoughts on both. Obvious pro for the golden doodle is less shedding, but I heard they can be a little neurotic. Have you found that to be true? Thanks again, Liz.
Excellent. Well, Liz, thank you very much for the question. What a wonderful question.
Yeah, thank you. That's an insightful question. Definitely.
Yeah, I think it's really hard to make breeds are breeds. I think it all comes down to the individual animal, doesn't it? Like, yeah, we'll get some of the oodles that come through that are wonderful, well-mannered, calm animals, calm dogs, really easy to train. And you get some that are just off the planet, you know, that they're anxious and jumpy and hyper-reactive. So I think, you know, and that same thing can happen with retrievers too. Yep. You know, like we've got some excellent clients that have got Goldens that are just so high maintenance and on edge. But so I think the hard thing there is, and I'll take this one, Lewis, because you know I like the behaviour stuff too. I think it's really hard to say between one and the other. As best as you can, go and try and meet the parents. I reckon go and try and meet the parents of the dog and see what they're like. And I reckon that's what I usually say to people. If you can see what the parents are like, because if you get a really good vibe from the parents that they're going to be fairly calm and relaxed and take it easy, chances are the genetics might rub off on their pups.
Spot on, mate. It's a big part of it. I mean, you know, whenever we talk about breed stuff and what breed should we get, yes, we do have some certain breeds that will push people down that path versus down another path, perhaps if you've got a certain sort of family setup. But the Golden Retriever versus Golden Doodle, exactly like you're saying, mate, there's not a lot of difference. The shedding aspect, look, you know, they're all dogs got hair. They're all going to put hair. So I wouldn't be sort of saying, you know, your retriever's going to necessarily shed less or more than your Golden Doodle. That would be my sort of thought. It's very, very good marketing associated with that sort of stuff. But as far as the behavior aspect, the neurotic aspect of it, certainly go and see mum and dad and go and try and visit the place where those dogs are going to come from or where the puppy's potentially going to come from. You can get a good idea of the environment. What are what are the breeders, in inverted commas, like? Mm-hmm. Are they a sort of breeder that's got a nice household with some kids running around that, you know, that a poodle and a golden retriever have had some puppies and they're all part of the family and they're getting picked up and they're getting dropped and they, well, not too heavily.
Not from a great height. You know, we're talking small kids. Yeah,
that's
right.
Yeah, small kids.
Bounceable height.
Toddler height. Yeah.
The puppies aren't reaching terminal velocity.
No, that's right. Not from the top story. No, definitely not. But you know and how are the breeders, you know, interacting with those dogs in the environment? Are they getting them, you know, out and about? Are they having a lot of visitors to the house, or is the setup just, you know, cages in the backyard sort of thing, where we're milling them out a little bit, or is it in between that? So that's probably the best stuff that you can do. Go and meet mum and dad. Yeah, get an idea. But also maybe meet, if they've had litters before, is there a way you can meet other pups that we've had? What, how have they turned out? That can give you a little bit of an idea of perhaps what sort of dogs are they throwing from a behavioral perspective. Make sure that they're going to give you that puppy ideally at about 10 weeks of age, if possible. They're not a breeder that says, eight to 10 weeks of age, something around that sort of mark, that they're not going to say, no, we hang on to 16 weeks of age, you know, because we want them here to, you know, do this or that. It is good they can get into your environment before they turn 12 weeks of age, because that's when the socialization period shuts off. So important to get that puppy at that right age. Other thoughts are certainly when you're going to choose a puppy, if you want to choose one on behavior, I normally say go and meet the pups when they're really young, maybe, you know, 4 or 5 weeks of age, just sort of getting mobile, that sort of thing. Go and meet all the pups, and you want the pup that is not the one carrying the corner or necessarily the one that runs up to you on first greeting and is all over you. You want that middle of the road puppy that's a bit like, hey, I'm doing my own thing. And then, oh, hang on, there's someone over there. Let's go and say good day over here, sort of thing. That middle road. And then sometimes
just on that, the puppy might not say g'day, given that if it's in Texas, it might be like hey y'all. Yeah, it might be a bit more of a hey y'all than a g'day. Might even say howdy.
If it says howdy,
that would be awesome.
If we were ChatGPT, we'd know.
we would know
what the correct terminology.
We would know the region, because that'd be part of the algorithm.
Exactly. It'd be right written in there, wouldn't it? And also, so when you're meeting the puppies and you're having some time, sometimes I say to do something that's maybe like drop your keys, like a bundle of keys on the ground, and just look at the response of the puppies. So the keys on the ground should give a fright to the puppies, but you want the puppy that gets a fright but then responds back to the keys and goes over and investigates them.
Yeah.
That's the sort of pup you want. You don't want the pup that gets a fright with the keys and just goes, oh, I'm staying away from those keys. That's scary.
Yeah.
You just want to see that puppy that responds a little bit better and comes back and goes, oh, some keys. What's going on there? I've got a fright. I'll go and check it out. Now, yeah. That's not hard and fast as to anything that's going to happen in the future, but there's a little bit of correlation between that sort of thing. So
yeah, okay.
They're probably the things that are going to more with those breeds being so similar. That's more the kind of thing that is going to help you, I think, choose between rather than going on, you know, any sort of internet search on which is more neurotic or you know certainly,
yeah.
like you said, we see lots of retrievers, we see lots of oodles, and they can't, they're a mixed bunch, you know. Yep,
yeah.
Some amazing, lovely dogs, but then you do have ones that are a little bit both breeds. What you might describe as neurotic.
Mm, yeah.
Excellent. So,
great.
Hopefully that helps you, Liz, and gives you a little bit of an insight. Sorry, it's taking a hot minute for us to get around to your question. But if you do have a question, you can send us a question at twovetstalkpets@gmail.com. You can get us on the socials. We are on Facebook. We're on Instagram. And Robbie, there must be something that you're on at the moment that is just coming to me.
Yeah, what am I on?
Yeah, I can't. Well,
there's a new one that all the kids are on with their games. What's that called?
Twitch or something.
Twitch.
Is it Twitch?
Yeah, is it Twitch? Might be.
Twitch.
Yeah, am I on Twitch? It might be. Am I a Twitcher now as well?
A Twitter. Oh, no, that's an extra one.
Anyway, it's a tweet. So
excellent. So, yep, you can let us know. And if you want to be a Patreon supporter, please go to patreon.com/twovetstalkpets and you can sign up. We got some stickers sitting here. We could send them out to you. Perhaps Liz,
you want a sticker?
We've sent stickers to the US. Numerous stickers to the US. So if you would like a sticker, Liz, please sign up to Patreon and we'll happily send you one out. Anyway, we're pretty well done, aren't we, mate?
Anything else? That's it. No, that's a lot, mate. We'll keep everything else ready for the next time we record in 2027. Nah, we'll try and get together a bit sooner again, guys. So be well, everyone. Send us through your questions, and we'll catch you again soon.
Scratch you later.
Peace out, mate.
Thanks for listening to Two Vets Talk Pets with Lewis and Robbie. To chat further about this week's episode or ask the guys any questions, search Two Vets Talk Pets on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or send an email to twovetstalkpets@gmail.com. You can find Lewis on Twitter with the handle @vetbehaviorist, and more importantly, as the two pet heroes return to their day job of saving animals' lives, be sure to thank them with a 5-star review on iTunes. Every time you do, a small, cute animal will receive a cuddle.